Welcome to the Presentation Podcast. Join us from inside the design studios for conversations about presentation design, strategies, tips and tricks, running a design studio, and more, all for presentation designers, managers, and presenters. Here are your hosts, Troy Collar, Nolan Hames, and Sandra Johnson.
Hi, I'm Troy Collar from TLC Creative Services, based in Southern California.
Welcome to the Presentation Podcast. This is Sandy Johnson with Presentation Wiz in sunny Minneapolis, Minnesota.
And I'm Nolan Hames from Nolan Hames Creative in very rainy Montclair, New Jersey.
Aw.
Oh, really?
Soggy.
Well, let's talk about what's happening in our studios besides inevitable rain and stuff. I just got back from Japan, so I am awake, which is amazing here. This is early morning here in California, and I probably should be asleep, but I think I'm good. I slept on the flight home, so hopefully I don't sound jet lagged. But it did rain on me. My one tourist day in I had one day that was a full day. It rained, so Nolan, I, you know, can empathize. But then it stopped raining and got like incredibly humid. But I still was out and about enjoying the sights and sounds of Tokyo.
Perfect.
I've never been to Japan. My wife's been a lot, and she said she was surprised at the humidity in general.
It's crazy. Yeah.
Oh, is it really? See, yes. I thought it was just a one-time thing because we had this huge storm pass through. Huh.
It's okay. Unbearable. It puts Minnesota to shame.
I did not know that. Mm-hmm. I wasn't prepared for that. So here's my take on it was a great meeting. Everything ran. At the end, everything was perfect. The client is totally appreciative. There was a lot of work getting there. But if anybody wants an opinion of PowerPoint versus Keynote for complex multi-screen presentations, so not your standard, hey, I got a 16:9, I'm going to present. Mm-hmm. PowerPoint has far superior tools that are missing in Keynote. And they were missing in PowerPoint years ago. It's just the PowerPoint's kind of continued to evolve. Mm-hmm. And it's just definitely the better option for production tools. And this was an all Keynote project, as I do many of them. The visuals were fantastic. But we had to keep two different languages in sync and just tools for production. We had some very long days and nights making the presentation work for, it was 90 minutes of amazingness that took like 120 hours of no sleep to get there because every change had to be reflected across through. And,
wow.
Even presenter view, I didn't use presenter view in PowerPoint do you guys use presenter view when you're presenting?
All the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you for training?
Well, I do, except, well, there seems to be an issue, at least on my end, with the current build of that not working.
We're talking about that.
In the way it needs to. But yeah, I can't live without it. It's kind of a bit of a safety blanket for me. But
see, and I was a big don't use it because there's a performance issue. Things stuttered. It didn't reflect, presenter view didn't actually show what was happening on the screen. And, presenter view is really good now. Now to the point where
exactly.
I'm like, I can't function without it. I mean, I really, really like it now. At this particular meeting, I couldn't actually see both of my screens from backstage. And so we had videos playing. I'm like, okay, are they playing? Because it's just a static. And
yeah.
Animation builds, they look horrible in presenter view because they just kind of pop on. You're waiting for the little bar to turn but I'm trying to keep things in sync, looking at multiple computers. And oh man, I was just not a happy person.
Hey, you had a very special helper on site, did you not?
I did. It was awesome. Thank you. So for everybody listening, Sandra Johnson has an amazing daughter.
Oh gosh. Well, I know, but...
who lives in another country away from her, which I would never want for my kids. So if my kids are listening, don't do that to me. But... we needed an interpreter. Lauren is a school teacher, basically, in Japan, if I get that right. And we kind of abducted her for the week from her job. And she did interpreting. We were actually really amazed at the level of English proficiency.
The everyday person, I believe, is too shy to speak English. But these people must just be used to it, must be, being exposed to it.
Fantastic.
Oh,
so
good.
Thanks, Lauren.
She was in her element.
It was, yeah, she, well, her element, yeah, she stands out, tall, blonde, definitely not Asian. And then she speaks fluent Japanese, everybody kind of looks at her like, wait a minute, you're not supposed to do that. It was really fun. It really, yeah, she was actually a highlight of the meeting for me. That's for certain.
Good.
What's happening
that's
for you,
great.
Too?
Well, you were in exciting Japan. I was in Chicago. Well, still a nice city, not quite on the level, but I was there last week for a training. It was good. Just one warning. Don't ever do a Windows update right before. You do it like a couple hours before thinking, I just don't want it popping up in the middle. And then your mice don't work for some bizarre reason.
Okay.
Well, I just used the trackpad. You know, it wasn't the worst thing in the world, but they got two of the three mice working again at the end. But just one of those bizarre things you never even think of. Training went well. Yeah. Chicago's good. Pizza was good.
Okay, wait, I got to jump in. I have a mouse story. So I love the little, it's a Microsoft mouse, and I actually use it on my Mac, and I have separate ones for Mac Windows. It's the little flat one called like the designer mouse. It's a little black. It's very low profile. I'll have to find a link. I hadn't even really thought about this. But anyways, I've been using this mouse for a while. Last time we were at Microsoft, I bought a couple more because I like them. They're like $20. The key is they're Bluetooth, by the way, so that I'm not using up a dongle space. Well, in my bag, in my carry-on, it has a little, a scroll wheel on the top of it.
Yep.
When I pulled it out, the scroll wheel had been smashed down. So you know how hard it is to use a mouse without a scroll wheel? You just don't realize how much you use it for, like, everything.
Oh.
So, Nolan, it's not as bad as the mouse not working. It's more frustrating because it half worked.
Not the biggest thing, right? Biggest thing in the world, but it's just one of those things that.
Yeah. Like, well, you're caught off guard. You just never want to be caught off guard. I haven't been traveling. I have just been working on a lot of design projects. I have a long-term client that is seeing the light. I'm one of my first clients, and I've begged them for years to let me build their templates. I was stuck, cleaning up slides for them, doing that sort of thing. And their templates were awful. And so finally, a year ago, they let me build all of their templates out. It was a really, really fun, large project. And a year later, now, they came to me and said, you know what? We're tired of our dense slides. We're tired of all the bullet points. We want you to start over. Gosh, it's a dream job. I had full creative reign. It was really, really cool.
Nice.
That is awesome. So Nolan, I'm following your footsteps. I take off for Chicago tomorrow. Mm-hmm. I'll be there for a couple of days. And then Sandy, okay, so everyone on our design team is busy with projects, just busy, busy, busy. It's all great stuff. But for anybody, all you new listeners, for all you new designers out there, one of the nice things that happen if you stay with design is exactly what Sandy said. Projects and clients return for follow-up projects.
That's
and those
right.
follow-up projects are the best. As example, exact same story, Sandy. But in this case, we did a major, like 12-month long corporate template design project. And it was actually 9 different deliverables. So we had templates for this and templates for that. It was awesome. Mm-hmm. Print templates, presentation templates, European A4 size templates for print. It was all really, really cool stuff. So that client actually wanted a new template. So they came to us, not like you, where they said, hey, here's our template, redesign it all. So we got to do the template. Took forever. But right now we're starting a template update project 24 months after the first project was completed. Uh-huh. Now we've worked small projects throughout them. And this one's hopefully going to be a 2-month project, not like the 2-year project,
right.
Because we know exactly what's doing. We've gotten all the hard work, gotten the legal teams and everybody ready to sign off on everything. The style guide's been approved. This is just an update. And you know what? Clients come back and you continuously end up with more and more work just by longevity. Well, mm-hmm. that and good reputation and good work, of course.
Exactly. This recent project, the take our story from scratch and rebuild it, that's already turned into 2 new similar stories for different groups, the consumer group versus the business to business group. So it's really turning into a fun client.
Well, let's move on to news in the design presentation world. I've been out of the loop. I haven't really been paying attention to much. I've been literally in a different time zone, like a day ahead, and working. And when I wasn't working, I was enjoying Tokyo has a lot of sights and sounds and great food to eat. So I don't really know if I have any news going on right now. Nolan, help us out. What's new in the world?
Nothing major, I don't think, except if you are having issues with specifically an Arc mouse or any mouse and Windows. Stay tuned. It's an issue. Jamie Garrock's text-to-outline feature, which we talked about in a previous episode, it's now fully featured on the Mac, so it works just the way it does on the PC, now on the Mac. And cool. I helped him out with the little updated icon for it. So
nice.
That's good.
And very nice.
Not going to give away any other things, but if you're hoping for more add-ins on the Mac, just stay tuned. I think there's some good stuff coming. So that's all the news I've got.
Hey, let's just call it a slow news week and move on to fun stuff like the real conversation. Okay, so color is the topic of the day. It's our conversation. And color, without stating the obvious, it is a major part of design and presentation design. How a presentation designer goes about using color, both as a designer for the design aspects and kind of the technical how-to when working in PowerPoint, especially for this conversation, are something we were talking and all three of us seen a very wide variety of approaches to using color, and some of it good, some of it good stories. This morning, we're talking about our personal approach and technical how-to the use of color in presentations.
So we're going to be talking sort of very granularly, I think, today about literally the color palette, that that little grid of chips, color chips. We're going to sort of dive into it. There's actually a lot to it. We're not going to cover everything to it, but we're going to talk about color and specifically using things from the palette. I do want to sort of preface this with saying that if you really want to know a lot about it, you should absolutely view some recent webinars we did for the Presentation Guild with Julie Terberg. I know I went back, and even though I hosted them, I went back and rewatched them in advance. I think it's mostly episodes 11, 12, and 13. Julie really dives down deep into the palette and gets very into adjusting it, editing it, how you can use it. So some of the things we're going to be talking about today are covered there, but that's a good. We're going to jump back and forth, all of us here today on this. I don't know how in order we're gonna cover it, but I do want to start off with the first four colors, right?
Well, I'm going to suggest that we back up just a little bit and just define what that color palette is. It's broken down into various chunks. When you want to fill, here's how you get it. You want to fill a color, that palette pops up, and on the top line, it's called theme colors. And on that top line, you have your theme colors that you program in your slide master. And that's what we're talking about when we talk about the color palette, for those people who might not know what that is. And there's also standard colors, and there's recent colors, and I'm sure through the course of this conversation cover those.
And to throw in one extra thing, if you really, really want an extra category in there, that is possible through HTML editing. You can actually have another category called custom colors.
Exactly.
We're not going to go into that.
Okay, and then I'm going to take us back a step even further. And let's talk about color, not a color theory class, but this is a presentation app, and it uses RGB values. So we have no CMYK, we have no PMS values, we have no, it does have HSL, but that's a whole nother topic. So, but basically, so everything's going to be more web-based colors. We can't use hex code keys. It's all RGB values. So when we're talking about colors, that is often one of the things I see is that people get, CMYK colors, and they're trying to convert them over, and it doesn't look quite right. So corporations are, that's not quite our red. I'm like, well, there was a conversion there. So, Microsoft Office isn't probably the best way to approach that conversion. Let's go figure it out over here and then take that value and plug it in. Okay, so there's the whole color. There's the back end color. Now let's move forward into using color.
All right. So within our palette, we're going to start talking about the first four colors, which are called they're called light one, dark one, light two, dark two. Okay, we're gonna call those the light darks, right? The accent colors are to come. Those are the latter six ones. So so let's talk about those light dark colors and
So here's what we're gonna say.
Yeah, there is Troy, jump in on this.
There is no reason, none, zero, cannot ever happen unless you're a bad designer. There always needs to be a black and a white. How many times do you get a template and you go to like just use black text, or you want to do it and there's no black in the theme colors? Like, how can you build a template without black? And now some people are going to argue with me, but we live in a black and white world, and you need black or white as one of those colors. And I just feel it is just completely stupid not to have a defined black or white color, because they are used in so many instances and they should be a part of the template. And you have these four colors right there where you could set it up. So there's my little.
Do you generally reserve that for spots 1 and 2? Or 3 and 4?
Actually, no, 1 and 2 are black and white, so they're always on the far left. And then we use the dark two and the light two as actually accent colors based on the color theme, but we don't want them to be showing up in charts and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So they're another way to approach it. But yeah, the no black white thing, it just irks me. Do you guys ever see templates like this? You go to, there's no black, but they have black color defined, because, you can set the default color, so somebody goes in and gets smart and they right click on their text box and they say, we'll just make the default color black by making text boxes black, but there's no black in the actual color scheme. So it's a lot of bad words to say right here. Stupid.
Right. And you pointed out charts. I think that is important, because one of the quirks of PowerPoint is that if you create a chart by default, it's the text from that, the text for those charts by default, all your labeling and everything is going to be pulled from those first two chips, I believe.
And you get ugly.
Right. However, it doesn't actually pull white and black. It pulls tints.
Right.
Of those.
Exactly.
So, if you set your second, for example, to be like a 75% gray, or let's say a blue, and PowerPoint's just going to go in and do a much lighter version of those for your labels. And in some cases, they're just going to be too light.
Right.
I mean, you can override it, of course.
Or ugly. You have that blue in there. We'll talk a little bit about HSL. Not a lot. We're not going to go into detail. But that hue can be really, really bad. In your charts.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Really bad.
And we don't use the word ugly. We just put bad design choices.
Okay. Very good.
Okay. So going along that line, so you have to have a black or a white. You have two other colors, and we don't have, when we're developing templates, we actually don't define those until the rest of the color scheme is built. And then we go, what else would we really want in there? Sometimes, here's a great example of it, of where we have gone. We put in, so a corporation has a green logo or a blue logo or whatever it is, but you're not allowed to use that blue as an accent color, but you need it in the color scheme. So a lot of times we'll use our dark two. Or, if it's a bright green or whatever, we'll use that as their logo color, because you need it, but they don't want it showing up in charts and whatnot. So it's a specialty use color, and I've often kind of relegated it to that area right there. Then there's some education, of course, like, hey, you can't really use this all the time,
right,
and where this can be used and stuff like that.
So, so we talked about chart, how charts pull labels from those first four colors. Anything else what else is pulled from that, or what else do those first four colors inform?
Well, tables, your table text is going to come from there. Your chart axis lines and your chart axis data labels, pretty much everything is automated. SmartArt is going to leverage those light dark themes. So it's kind of aggravating, actually, that you cannot define those elements as other colors. That those are where they're going to pull from. And I think people setting up templates don't fully understand the ramifications of setting those colors now.
Right. And those also affect if you want to go to a dark background, if you want to make a version like a separate template or separate layouts with a dark background, it's going to pull that. Now, if those are set up, again, light dark with a high contrast, you're ahead of the game, because it's automatically, if you do a dark background, it's automatically going to swap and apply the text as that lighter version. So that's why you don't want, you know, let's say, okay, you take Troy's advice, you do white and black for the first two, but then you do like dark blue and dark red for the three and four, because those are brand colors. Not good.
Because, correct.
Right. So you want it, you do really want to keep one light and one dark. I mean, yeah, you can do like a light beige and a really dark brown if that's your thing, but keep those contrasting.
And I just wanted to clarify background. So in, you kind of reference this, but we're not talking about just changing the background color. When right. you're creating your theme, working on your masters, what you'll want to do is to make sure, I think it's called format background, correct? Is that what it is?
Yes.
Yep.
Yes. Format, we're talking about background styles or the background of the slide?
It's yes. I'm talking about background styles.
Okay.
Okay. That is a part of the process for creating your PowerPoint template. You have to establish background styles.
I know we're going to talk about templates coming up here in a couple of episodes or a couple of, I don't know, it's a couple of months out. But so this is getting probably a little too granular on a templating. But when you're building a template, the very first thing you do is you decide if it's going to be a light background or a dark background. You set right. the background style, which is mm-hmm. not setting the background. Ground. It's setting it so that it knows whether to use light, dark, or dark light.
That's right.
Right. And those background styles, you're going to have four options, basically, which are pulled from your first four chips.
That's right.
That doesn't mean once you set that, you can't, like, let's say it gives you black as a background. You're like, yeah, I want a dark blue. It doesn't mean you can't then go in and manually change all right. those dark backgrounds, but your white text, it's still going to know.
It's going that, to be automatic. Oh,
I'm using white text. Yeah, mm-hmm. it's going to be automatic. Yes. And also, again, too, this doesn't mean that you can't do your 85% or 90% gray for text.
Correct.
Which is still a nice thing to do. I think, you know, very often in professional print, and we do it often in presentation design, your text is not going to be 100% black. It'll be like 85 or 90% because it's a little easier on the eyes. Thing. So a lot of the professional print pieces you see, it's not 100% black. It's actually a little lighter. All right. So are we done with our first four chips?
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, so the next six chips we're going to call accent colors. All right, so those different from our first four theme or light, dark, whatever they're mm-hmm. called, accent colors. And these are where you're going to bring in your brand colors, your rainbow of whatever you need. And generally starting with the first one, it was actually the fifth chip, but your first accent color is generally going to be the one you're going to use most often, mm-hmm. right? If you're Coca-Cola, it's going to be your red. Mm-hmm. If you're whatever, IBM, that's going to be the blue right there. So what about these six colors? What did these affect?
Well, charts, those six colors are the six colors for six colors on your charts. After that, I think it's a screen, right? A variation. Those six colors impact charts. It impacts smart art. Although be aware that the first color in smart art is accent two. It's not accent one. It makes no logical sense, but you know, that's craziness. It impacts tables, uh-huh, the colors uh-huh. of tables. It gives you those table styles. Is it called table styles in PowerPoint?
Yeah.
Yes. Yep. Mm-hmm. It gives you table style colors. What else, Troy?
Your photos. Recoloring
photos. Oh, yes, recoloring photos. Yep.
So if you're bringing in, if you're bringing in like black PNGs, you're not using SVGs yet. If you're bringing black PNGs and you want to recolor them, you can only recolor them to one of those six chips.
So let's back up. Why are we so adamant about using theme colors versus...
Good point.
Let's talk about standard colors, because when you see the dropdown, every single file you open is going to have theme colors. Right below it, there's a row of standard colors. Why would you... Okay, let's start off with good things. Let's be positive. Why would you use a standard color? Or where would you use a standard color? I have a few defined areas.
Laziness. That's generally why I use them. Oh, I need something quickly red. Yeah, I'll just
Fire engine red. I use it for all of my air. I mean, literally, I use the red and the cyan blue. Those are my two go-to colors. And other than that, so the dilemma with a standard color is they've been around since Microsoft 98. They haven't mm-hmm. changed. They're very mm-hmm. they're very standardized, but they're not your theme color. So if you have a red in your theme, it's not going to be the fire engine red. It's, you know, there, it's kind of interesting that there are just this palette that's been out there and it never changes. You cannot make it go away and it should not be a part of your color use. Like I said, I like when we're doing a chart and we have to do a red, we're going to highlight a certain set of cells and I don't have a good color to use in the color theme, I'll use the standard red, the fire engine red there all the time.
I used to use the yellow before we got our highlighter. I would use that yellow for pretend highlighting.
Yeah. I do use the yellow. I use the yellow. I never use that orangey color or the purple or the dark blue. They're just there. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Don't use them, people.
I don't use them. When I build a template and deliver it to a client, there's always a slide on color. And okay. I pull up the palette. I take a screenshot of that. I describe what the theme colors are. These are your theme colors. And I break out the chart, default chart colors. Uh-huh. I always put a big red line using the standard colors. No, but using red, and I say, do not use. I do not, on the standard colors and the recent colors, I will always say, do not use.
So, okay. What about, okay. So then let's go back to before we talk about themes and how to use them appropriately and color use in it. You know, we'll talk about contrast and things that people do that I've seen poorly done. Recent colors are not theme colors, even though they could look like it.
Right. And if you choose something, and so I think what we're sort of dancing around is whenever humanly possible, with a couple of exceptions, you want to be choosing colors from your theme colors. You don't want to be picking standard or recent or whatever, because it's not tied to the template. If down the road somebody wants to tweak a color or change a color palette, or if you want to do a really cool thing like reuse a template and just reskin it, or reskin a whole presentation in just a couple of minutes and make it look completely different, all those colors you've chosen, not from the theme colors, are not going to change.
Yeah, I mean, that's the beauty of the whole theme colors thing, is that they translate. As example, we work with a lot of different a lot of different pharma or medical presentations. Medical charts are never ending. They're all color based. And we've now gotten to a great spot with a number of our clients where, you know, we know the content's going to come back to life every single month. We're doing a new conference template. So we'll build out the theme colors to work with it. And we'll take the older slides, or the client will actually assemble all the older slides and add in the new ones. Once we dump them into the template, all the colors automatically update. Then we're basically doing more of a like continuity checks to make sure everything's the same and everything did update. Cause, you know, all of a sudden we'll end up with a dark blue bar chart on a dark blue background. Well, okay, those obviously weren't tagged to the original theme colors, because they would have updated to a light blue and it would have worked. But it works so well when it works. It's just a production level thing. Mm-hmm. Makes your life easy.
So you may want to actually not choose a theme color if, for example, you want something to never change. Like, let's say you're creating a logo. I mean, I don't know why you do this, but let's say you're creating like a fake logo within PowerPoint. You always want it to be hard-coded green. If you choose not a theme color by any method, it will always be green no matter what the color palette is.
What about, okay, so I know I said this rule earlier, you always have to have a black or white. Can the black or white be in one of the six accent colors?
Is this a trick question for us?
I'm going to go with no, they belong in the light darks. They should never be in the accent colors.
Well, I mean, I will say, maybe I guess on that point, if you only have two or three brand colors and you really don't want anything else in there, you don't, you know, want to specify a green or yellow, whatever, you don't have to fill all six out. I mean, you can repeat them or as or I guess you could fill it with black and white. But I'm guessing you should do that. No, but you can definitely repeat colors. You don't have to just select random colors if you don't want people using them.
That's an interesting thought. I actually don't approach it that way. The opposite though is a corporation has a style guide with, you know, with nine primary colors and like nine secondary colors and tertiary colors. You know, they've got more colors than office can handle. And it's at that point you go, okay, what do we do here? Now, there are ways to add in another line. We're not going to talk about that. So I usually start the approach of, listen, Microsoft Office has got, it's a game of give and take. And I'm going to tell you all the bad things as we go. No, we can't do this. This is one of them. We have this defined area. We have a total of 6 accent colors and these 4 other colors. Let's fill those out to be the most efficient for you. And then we'll figure out what we can do with the other ones, because they're not really going to fit the mold. No, we cannot recode the program to accommodate your corporate client. You know, so you do have to work within these boundaries. Every now and then I run into the situation where you have fewer colors. And hadn't really thought about, to be honest, Nolan, of repeating the colors.
Because I work with some smaller organizations that they have red and black, or red and green, and that's it. And there's nothing else. And a lot of times we'll put in colors because we know we're going to need them as contrast. So they're not officially part of their branding, right, but we put them in there. But it, every once in a while, they just don't even want those getting in there. And so we don't.
Well, what I would do, I've done that, Nolan. I have repeated colors, but what I do in the case of, let's say a client has a very colorful color palette and those charts don't necessarily look good, I will select their primary color and purposely create a monochromatic version in the accent colors. So that by default, when they insert a chart, now it's not the circus colors, it's a monochromatic blue, whatever. You know, you can manually change that in PowerPoint, but I want it to be the default.
Yeah, that's not a bad reminder that charts will take that. So if you do repeat colors, you could be getting into some trouble.
Exactly. So then maybe even with the repeat colors, maybe I'll do a monochromatic, let's say they're red and green, bad choice, but I might repeat, do the monochromatic red rather than
that's a great
repeating
idea.
It.
I like that. Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's talk about charts though, because when we're setting up the accent colors, I would say accents 1, 2, 3, maybe 4 are the most important, because of all the bar charts you see, they're usually 1, 2, 3, or 4 data points. So you're going to have a bar chart of 4 data bars. I'll just simplify it to that. And it's going to pull from those accent colors. So we may get the color scheme, corporate branding color scheme, and we'll look at it and go, look, you've got a blue and another blue.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a green and an orange. And I'm trying to think of colors that are really bad together. And a purple. No, because orange and purple. Anyways, we won't use their color order. I'll look at it as I want the first 4 colors to make bar charts and line charts that look good. So I'm going to separate the 2 blues so I don't have blue and blue. Unless I'm looking for monochromatic color, I'm not going to put the red right next to the orange because I don't want the 2 bars to be red and orange next to each other. That's horrible to look at. So I'm going to separate them apart based on the visual, put them in position so that charts just naturally look good together.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Makes perfect sense.
What about using the color picker? You guys, the drop down. Wait, is that the word I want to use? Not the color picker. So if I select text,
the eyedropper,
and I want to use the eyedropper. You see, exactly, the eyedropper.
You can. I mean, certainly to pick up colors, but that's not going to automatically apply it to the palette.
But I picked the blue box. It's the theme blue, Nolan.
Oh, it's Sandy. He was setting.
Yeah, he was setting you up. He got you again.
Playing along. That's right. But just like in PowerPoint 2011, yes, it will technically pick the right RGB value, but it's not going to be the color palette. So don't do that. In rewatching Julie's Inspired by Design, she made a good point that you kind of do maybe inherently, but it's a good reminder. When you're picking those 6 colors, you want them to be high contrast enough so that either black text or your dark text, or more often white text, will work over it. So while it might be nice to have, let's say, like a mid-range, mid-range
taupe.
You just wanted to use that word. It was on his word a day calendar today. So it might be nice to have a mid-range. If white type doesn't look great over it, maybe you want to find a different color.
You know what people are at Google right now going, what is taupe? T-A-U-P-E.
or as a client said the other day, a more chartreuse green.
Oh,
I was like, okay, got it, sure. I mean, hey, it's a real color. we're right now editing a color palette to make one of the chips more chartreuse.
So let's talk about the hyperlink colors, because they're so, the hyperlink colors are not a part of my usage. I try and, you know, because most of our presentations are, you know, large projection screen, and we're removing the coding for hyperlinks all the time. I don't want the underlined. I don't want to turn colors. And the default, is it like blue and purple? What's the defaults for hyperlinks? I can't. Well, I have to open a new document.
Blue, yeah, it's that awful blue, yeah, I think.
Which, mm-hmm, you know, was like old 1990s web blue. But you can change those. Those are a part of your template setup. Do you guys ever address those?
I do every time.
What do you do? I'm kind of curious. I'm not going to give it away. We have rules in our template build. What do you generally do, Sandy?
I don't have rules. I think it just depends on their color. I don't use them in PowerPoint, but I want to establish them. So sometimes the rule is I use that space to make sure I have a complete color palette. The problem with that is you can't access that for anything else other than your hyperlinks, right? So then I have to put those in custom colors, but I think I try to make them as
subtle.
Subtle. Thank you. I could not find the good word. Subtle as possible.
Yeah, I don't love those hyperlink things. I try to ignore them. But
Troy, do you have a rule?
I do, actually. So we'll set whatever our primary bullet color is, which is generally, if it's a light background, it's going to be black, or we actually use an 85% gray a lot. I'll set the hyperlink color to be the same color so that if somebody types in a web address or an email address, at least it will blend in with it. It'll just be the text with an underlined under it, under that point, at that point. The followed link, we actually just do it as a accent of that. Now,
yeah, good idea.
It's a little tricky because if you have, let's just say, black text, but you're putting the hyperlink inside of a box and your default box is like a dark blue, now you've got black text in a dark blue box. So then you end up with a contrast issue, which is right back to where we started. And that, there's just no good way to use hyperlinks. I mean, they're very valuable in a lot of distributed documents. Presentations, I don't really think you need them there because nobody's going to be able to click on it because you own the presentation. Maybe that's another template, or that's a PowerPoint setup thing. I actually turn off automatic hyperlinks so that when we type in a www or an @ email address, it doesn't automatically code them on our presentations, on our version of PowerPoint, our setup of PowerPoint. Mm-hmm.
Is that, can you set that? Do you have to set that on a file by file basis, or can you set that?
No, it's a program based thing. It's pretty. You go into File, Advanced, and then there's.
It is under auto. It's called auto
yes,
format.
Yes, that's where it's at.
Yeah, that's okay. Where it is. Yeah, and it is available on the Mac.
I'm trying to think of how to phrase this. Contrast and good design don't always go hand in hand. Form over function,
right.
Function over form. So there is a huge balance. And it's one of the reasons I think a lot of people have a white template, because it's just so easy to work with, and the fact that they can actually use the pale pink color over white and it'll still have enough contrast. Whereas if they get into any sort of color background, contrast is a really hard thing to identify. And it goes so far as to, where are you going to use the presentation? Is this going to be looked at on somebody's laptop? That's one level. Is it going to be projected? That could be a different level. Now, in my case, I was just, my meeting, we were projected, rear projection, they had to be at least 30K projector. So I had 60,000 lumens of light. So my contrast level or my white level is going to be huge compared to a boardroom that's going to have a 3,000 lumen projector in a room that's lit. An LED wall. LED wall has a whole different level of contrast because things are so vibrant at that point. You're a lot of times working to tone down contrast because it hurts your eyes to look at. This is the design topic of color. You have to have a color scheme that gives you the flexibility to design correctly, I guess is the word to say.
It's a really good point. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I have no answers. I'm just throwing out the information there.
Good information. Good information.
What else? What else have we not covered, or gotchas or little tricks and tips?
Well, when I'm building templates, I do put sample charts in there. And instead of leaving the default labels, I will change it to accent color 1. I will create accent color 2, accent color 3, so that I'm continuing the education of the user. Right. I've told them what their theme colors are. Now I'm continuing to educate them by showing labels of the actual colors in charts so that they're aware of it.
You know, on chart and labels, this is like, to me, a, I don't want to call it a bug, but this is a shortcoming of PowerPoint that gets me. I don't know if it irks you guys, but when you do a data label on top, it's going to pull it, all chart labels are going to pull from your light, dark. Just the thing we start with, you pick your background style and it's going to pick which light or dark color to use. So mm-hmm. if you have a white background or a light background and you set your background styles to white, it's going to give you what will most likely be a black for all your labels and this and that. So mm-hmm. you add a data label to your chart. Above it, it's black. You put it inside the data, you know, you put the data label inside, it still stays black, even though you have a dark blue bar. Like, why can't PowerPoint be smart enough to realize this is a dark color and I should be using my light color data label? Mm-hmm. Contrast. Again, it's all about the contrast and legibility. Shortcoming of the program. And that doesn't sound easy to code, by the way, but bugs me. I know we talked about the eyedropper, but what about the Format Painter tool? Because it, similar idea as, you know, when you select a, you know, you use the eyedropper to go pick up. Eyedropper is kind of confusing because there's the eyedropper when you're on the text or the shape and you do the drop down, you say, hey, I want to use the eyedropper to pick up mm-hmm. the color, and mm-hmm. it gives you the little color thing. But then there's an eyedropper tool, which is a legacy tool that I still add to my QAT because mm-hmm. I find it so much more functional than the Format Painter tool, but it's also called the eyedropper. Hadn't really put that together till now.
Well, those will, if you're painting color from one to the next, those will apply the theme color. You're not going to run into that PowerPoint 2011 thing.
Mm-hmm. So that's a good thing.
So it is mm-hmm. it's a nice shortcut.
Other topics. What else? We talked about contrast. We talked about all the theme colors. Oh, what about the tints of theme colors?
Yeah.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. There is some sort of algorithm calculation going on that Microsoft uses to come up with those tints, but in a lot of cases they're just terrible. They're just not pleasing, or they're not equivalent or even. So unfortunately, you cannot manually edit those. However, to get wonky, there's an InDesign article which we'll link to from Julie Terberg, and also I think we covered this in the mm-hmm. webinar, one mm-hmm. of the webinars. You can not edit those tints, but you can edit your actual colors using HSL. You basically, long story short, is you can change the color numbering for your accent colors without really affecting the way the color actually looks on the screen, and by playing with that, you can affect how the tints are created. So if you spend a little time, you can end up with better tints. Did I cover that right?
Yeah, pretty well. HSL stands for hue, saturation, lightness. And the tutorial that you referenced, the key is you start with saturation, because that's usually where the brightness comes from, and you tone that down. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of you play with the hue and the lightness then to match your color to your RGB. So it appears to be the exact same color, but it tones down the tints.
So the way I describe it, because every now and then we'll pull it up, especially when a client's looking over my shoulder and I'll start playing with it. They're like, what's that? I go, oh, it's just contrast fine tuning. That's like my,
there you go. Mm-hmm.
That's my as low level as I can explain HSL. I'm like, it's the same color. It's just, we're adjusting the contrast of that color.
Okay.
Not totally accurate, by the way, but that is a good description that makes everybody go, oh, okay.
Speaking of the eyedropper, I thought I heard someone tell me that if you could use one of the drawbacks is that the eyedropper cannot capture color off the slide, correct?
Well, we're talking about the eyedropper, like you're going to fill and you go to the, like, not the eyedropper tool that I was talking about, the format eyedropper. You're talking about the one where I want to fill a square with a color of something else on the slide.
Yes, exactly.
So select the eyedropper. Okay. So I'm going to select a shape. I'm going to go to the eyedropper.
Yep.
Okay. So here. Okay. So if you want to use the eyedropper outside of your PowerPoint slide, it's actually easier than it sounds. I don't know how you do this on a trackpad. Well, I guess you click. Okay. So anyways, here's my example. I've got a shape. It's a dark blue shape. I'm going to go to my fill bucket. I'm going to select eyedropper. Now I've got the eyedropper tool. I'm going to click down my mouse, but I'm not going to let up it. And I'm going to move all the way out of PowerPoint. I'm now over into OneNote, and I can capture any color in OneNote. And then as soon as I let go on that color, it now pops that color over into PowerPoint. So it's very cool.
You just hold the mouse down.
It's not a key command. It's a mouse command, I guess you'd call it.
Yeah.
And it's really cool. What's really funny is, I think I mentioned this before, but I was in Photoshop like a month or so ago, and I was trying to capture a color of a PDF that was on my other screen. So I'd select the eyedropper tool, the color sampler, and I'd move it off and I couldn't get it. I was like, wait a minute. This isn't working. It's because it works in Microsoft Office, not in Adobe Suite.
There you go.
All right. Did we cover everything?
A rambling conversation all about color. There's a lot of cool, hopefully great conversation there. Color is very important. Contrast is very important. Using the theme colors is really smart if you're building PowerPoint slides, because it'll make your life and everybody else's life down the road much easier, because PowerPoint is a repurposed tool. And if you're going to repurpose the slides, having them set up on those theme colors just makes your life easy. We then need to back up and say the colors need to be set up in the template, which is a topic we'll get to in the next coming months here. And before that, you also have to know that the color values are actually RGB based. And sometimes you have to do some conversions from PMS spec colors or CMYK and other stuff like that. And with that, we hope it was a ton of fun to have you join in on a conversation of three designers rambling about color. Thank you.
Let's talk pro and tech tips. Troy, what do you got?
Well, seeing as how just yesterday I finished my 10 and a half hour flight from Tokyo to LAX and then drove home from there, I am going to highly recommend Bose noise canceling headphones. Bose noise canceling headphones. And you know what? I recommend both the larger over the ear and the earbud ones.
I have the earbuds. I love them.
I carry them both with me. It depends on where I'm going. And I carry on the longer flights. Oh yeah. Well, when I sleep, I like the earbuds in, but when I'm, actively listening, I kind of like the over the ear ones. Just noise canceling anything is just highly, highly valuable. That long of a flight is just a lot of droning noise, or a shorter flight with the crying toddler behind you that you just so much want to help out, but it's just not going to help. So it's easier to get rid of the noise. Highly recommended. There's my tech tip. I'll put a link to both of them. It's worth the money.
Great. I am going to recommend that our listeners tune into Facebook, our Facebook page for the Presentation Guild Book Club.
What?
Yes. We are launching a book club. The first book that we will be reading is Resonate by Guild Advisory Board Director Nancy Duarte. And the good news about this particular book is that it's free in a PDF format. So if you go to the Presentation Guild Book Club, you can ask to join. We'd like to invite a bunch of people, but it automatically puts you in the club, and we don't want to do that, to be presumptuous. So please just visit the Presentation Book Club on Facebook, join it, and there's a schedule.
Wait, is that
meetings.
The URL, the Presentation Book Club, or what am I
no,
doing?
No, no, no. You're on Facebook and you have to search for the Presentation Guild Book Club. I suppose I could put the hyperlink in.
Is it? It's a different.
There it is. Right. Yep. So
wait a minute. I just opened Facebook. Nice. Nolan, there are some amazing pictures of you in here.
Oh, are you doing your
I'm doing our original headshot.
That's great. I love it.
That is awesome. It's Nolan as the dapper 17-year-old.
Adorable is my word.
25?
I think I'm about 15.
Oh my gosh.
In those photos.
But anyway, so, and it ends, each book club process ends with the author as guest. So Nancy, the final book club meeting will be a webinar with Nancy in real time, and our members can...
How does it work? Is just people posting and interacting on that Facebook page?
No, it'll be live meetings. So it's the capstone chat, which is with Nancy being there, is June 13 when everybody's done reading it. That is only open to members. Up until that point, the meetings, June 7th, Facebook live chat. May 23rd, Facebook live chat. All those, anyone can join those and be participating in the discussion with the free book. Cool.
And just to reference this, being a member of the Presentation Guild does not make you a member of the Facebook club. You have to join that in addition.
Yes. Yes. Yep. Members, non-members alike have to go to the Facebook page, the Presentation Guild Book Club.
Okay. And I clicked plus join group. So let's see what happens.
Okay.
Are you moderating this? Could you?
I'm one of the moderators. I'll let you in.
Okay. I just joined.
Thanks, guys.
What do I got? All right. Well, I have a book.
Is it going to be in the book club? I know who to lobby to.
The book is Factfulness by Hans Rosling. And unfortunately, I mean, it is written with his son and daughter-in-law or son and daughter. But unfortunately, Hans did die about a year ago or maybe a little over that. And so this book was finished by his kids, even though it's written in his voice. Hans Rosling, if you don't know him, he was a physician and a data scientist and a sort of a huge TED Talk personality. He was famous for his animated bubble charts of showing health around the world and statistics. So the whole book is essentially how we mostly in the Western world get the world wrong. We have misinterpretations of the world. You know, we think, poverty is at certain levels. We think education is at certain levels. And basically it starts off with this quiz, this like 15 question quiz that he's given over the years to people all over the world, his audiences. And you take the quiz and of course you get almost everything wrong because he's basically showing through statistics and data, the things we think are incorrect. And my favorite, and it's great for a lot of reasons, but there's a lot of great visual storytelling and visual data displays in it. And my favorite, I tweeted about this, is so every question has three answers. And he makes the point over and over that a group of chimpanzees taking this quiz will get 33% right. Because if they just pick randomly, chances are they'll get one third right. But he shows over and over how our misconceptions lead people. He shows all the results of various people taking this quiz. People come in well under one third. Mm. So our misconceptions mean we're thinking about the world even less than a chimpanzee would. Like we're even less random. So on a lot of his charts, he'll have a line at the 33% line with the little face of a chimpanzee. Oh. And you'll see the bars either above or below. And you'll see, oh, this group of people, worse than a chimpanzee. So that's that. The chimp metric is a great one. So it's a fantastic book. And again, there's also some other good visual storytelling in there as well. So I highly recommend it. It got like the best book jacket blurb I think you can get, which is Bill Gates saying, "This is one of the most important books I've ever read in my life."
Wow.
That's selling a few books, I'm sure.
Hey, this is Troy from TLC Creative Services, Hi, this is Troy from TLC Creative Services, a design studio filled with incredible designers focused on presentation design. We're online, we're on Facebook, we have a blog, we have a podcast if you're not listening and don't know about it. And we look forward to talking to everybody.
This is Nolan Hames from Nolan Hames Creative. Check out my blog, presentyourstory.com, for lots of goodies and downloads and articles. And if you're interested in on-site data or presentation training, just give us a call. That's what we do.
And this is Sandy Johnson with Presentation Whiz. You can visit my website and my blog at presentationwhiz.biz or the Presentation Guild site at presentationguild.org. I'm also on LinkedIn as Sandra Johnson, PowerPoint MVP, and Twitter as PPTWiz.
For episode show notes, links, and more from this episode, visit us at our website, www.thepresentationpodcast.com. The Presentation Podcast is produced by TLC Creative Services, Inc. You can contact us with episode suggestions, questions for our hosts, or comments through our website. Subscribe at the iTunes Store or at our website for additional options. If you like the podcast, rate us on iTunes. Stars and reviews are greatly appreciated. Look for new episodes the first and third Tuesday of each month.